This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Seth Godin. Businessweek calls him the ultimate entrepreneur for the information age. And many of you know him as an author, a blogger, a speaker, an entrepreneur, and really potentially the leader of the new marketing movement. The highlights of today's show are...
The beauty of writing books is you can tell people you have a job, but you're allowed to do whatever you want all day long. Well, I think my thesis is this. In the 20s and the 30s, when factories were so important, all a company did was make stuff. And if you were the head of manufacturing, you were running the company. Henry Ford triumphed because he understood how to manufacture cars better than anybody else. Well, we now live in a world where manufacturing is trivial, and owning a factory is an impediment, not an advantage in many cases. So as a result, the core competency of an organization is the whole grab bag of tools that I call marketing. And what it is at its core is the idea that companies of the future are about connecting people to each other and people to the organization, not about making average products for average people and selling them en masse, which is what I call meatballs. Well, in All Marketers Are Liars, I talked about this, the fact that what people buy when they buy something is not the widget or the specs or the cycle time or the cost and performance ratio. What they're buying is the story. Part of it comes from the way we think about DNA. One skin cell is enough to recreate a whole human. You have to make it so that every piece of what you do can live and die on its own and communicate a lot of your story.
On today's show, we're going to talk about authenticity, Google dicing, infinite channels, AA, which in this case means after advertising, the art of possibility, and maybe we'll talk about the last orange squid. Okay, let's get Seth on the show. Welcome, Seth.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. After many years of pursuit, you finally relented and allowed me to interview you.
Persistence is underrated.
Absolutely. I'm all about that, man. A couple weeks ago, we had Steve Wozniak on. It took me a year to talk him into coming on the show, and he did such a great job and opened up so much we had to have a two-part episode. So it's definitely worth the time. So you are, as I said in my opening, you're an author. You're the author of 10 books. Well, and you told me maybe even 50. Is that because of the e-books and all of the things that you've written?
Well, my job before this and before the other thing was I was a book packager. Book packagers think of ideas for books and then make sure they get written. Sometimes I wrote the books myself. Sometimes I hired people to write the books. But all of these 10, every word was written by me, and these are my real books.
Nice. Well, it's kind of like venture capitalists. They think about market opportunities, and then they go find entrepreneurs to create the businesses. So that's what you were doing in the book world previously.
Yeah, except I worked a lot harder than a venture capitalist.
Yeah, I can imagine, and you probably still do. I can tell you're quite the hustler and full of fabulous ideas. I want to just go through the list of the books that you've written, mostly because they just have such great titles. The latest book that we're going to talk about on today's show is Meatball Sunday. Previous to that, and one I didn't read, and I am ordering it. I'm going to order this, Seth. I don't like to take free books. I always buy them because I want to support the authors. I didn't read The Dip, and that sounds really interesting to me. Somehow I missed that one. Before that, you wrote Small is the New Big, All Marketers Are Liars, which I'd like to hear more about that, Free Prize Inside, The Purple Cow, which I think you're probably most well known for, The Big Red Fez, Survival is Not Enough, Unleashing the Idea Virus, which was one of the words that you've coined in the industry, in addition to Permission Marketing, which was your first book, and a word that you, I think, co-coined with Susan Storm.
No, Susan's terrific, but I think I have to take credit for Permission Marketing.
There you go. I just got a press release that she joined some new company, and she's, I don't know her, but I thought, oh, wow, she co-coined that term. So.
Susan is terrific, and anyone who ever has a chance to work with her or hire her should do so.
That's great. Well, before that, before you started this torrent of book writing around the marketing space. You had founded a company called Yoyodyne, which was acquired by Yahoo. You didn't last long there. You really left and started doing all of your marketing thought leader work and writing. Is that right?
Well, I was at Yahoo for about a year, and while I was there, managed to help sell millions and millions of dollars worth of promotions and advertising. A bunch of things came to pass that needed me to be in New York, and so I sort of transitioned by doing speeches for Yahoo and then speeches on my own, and that led, permission marketing had already come out before then, but that led to, you know, one after another, because the beauty of writing books is you can tell people you have a job, but you're allowed to do whatever you want all day long.
Yeah, I like that too. Well, one of the things that I want to do in the second half of the show after the break is talk to you about public speaking and get any tips that you have for our listeners, because I bet almost all of our listeners have to do presentations of some kind, and I'm always asking great speakers to share their perspective on what makes a great speaker. So we'll get to that. I want to start out with your latest book, Meatball Sunday. Is Your Marketing Out of Sync? I read this book, and it's not a marketing book. It's a business strategy book. It's about how business is done in today's world. But I understand that a lot of it has to do with how one markets. But you really went way beyond marketing in this book.
Well, I think my thesis is this. In the 20s and the 30s, when factories were so important, all a company did was make stuff. And if you were the head of manufacturing, you were running the company. Henry Ford triumphed because he understood how to manufacture cars better than anybody else. Well, we now live in a world where manufacturing is trivial, and owning a factory is an impediment, not an advantage in many cases. So as a result, the core competency of an organization is the whole grab bag of tools that I call marketing. And so I would say that everything is marketing, and so it's impossible to write a good marketing book that doesn't talk about what the entire organization does, because I think great companies are run by marketers and think like marketers.
I would agree with you, as would everybody who's listening to you right now. One of the things that I really enjoyed was right at the beginning of the book when you talked about the Industrial Revolution actually having multiple segments. Would you just briefly go over that little bit of history with us? Because I think it gives us a really good historical perspective on what's happening today in our information revolution.
Well, the biggest thinkers in Silicon Valley and the most successful people have always seen cycles, and they have built companies that weren't about, you know, one little trivial tactic, but about wholesale watershed moments in history, the Intels and the Googles and the Apples and the Yahoos of the world. And I took that one step further, and I said, guess what? There's been four or five industrial revolutions, one about transportation, one about manufacturing, one about mass marketing, mass media. Each time, new winners are invented. Each time, whole new organizations are built, and new fortunes are created, and new habits are built. And I'm arguing that we haven't had an industrial revolution since 1940, when we shifted to mass marketing and TV, and I think we have one right now. And it is populated by the tools of social marketing, the new marketing, Web 2.0, whatever you want to call it. And what it is at its core is the idea that companies of the future are about connecting people to each other and people to the organization, not about making average products for average people and selling them en masse, which is what I call meatballs.
Exactly. So you are talking about the thinking of the AA age. We're in the AA age now. Talk about what that is and how meatballs are in the AA age.
Sure. Well, before advertising, you know, you had the local florist, you had word of mouth, you had carpenters, you had journeymen. During advertising, you had David Ogilvy and Procter & Gamble. Well, after advertising is a whole different era, and it has a lot in common with the before advertising world, but not a lot in common with the during advertising world. Meaning, the things that made Gillette and Procter & Gamble and Schick and General Foods giant winners 20 years ago are extraordinarily unlikely to work today. And that doesn't mean they're going to go out of business. We still need Jell-O. It just means they're not going to grow, not the way that the web has taught us companies can grow. And the companies that are growing today are playing by fundamentally different rules. And the warning of the title is don't mix those rules up with the old kinds of companies, because you'll just waste money and make a mess. The promise of the book is that if someone had sat next to you in 1918 and taught you about mass marketing and the assembly line, you could have created a dynasty. And I think that we have to cut through a lot of the noise and the hype that's going on right now and realize that we are in one of those moments again. And it's up to us to either take advantage of it or regret it later.
In the book, you've organized it into 14 trends that no marketer, and I believe and you believe, no business owner or worker can ignore. I'm going to read those trends, and then there are, one, two, three, four, five that I really want to get a little deeper on. So let me just read them for our listeners so they can get the real scope of this book. In the first chapter, the trend that you can't ignore is going direct to consumers, the change in the manufacturing process and the ceasing of the middleman and the distribution channel. In the second one, you talk about consumer-generated content and having to deal with that as a business. The third is about authenticity of your story, and I want to come back and talk about that one. The fourth is about ad clutter and short messages and the power of such. The fifth is, of course, the long tail, which we all know the power of and are learning even more every day the power of. The sixth is outsourcing in virtual companies, which, of course, we're all aware of because we read about it all the time in the newspapers. The seventh, which I want to get to, is Google dicing, or what you call atomizing.
You can just say molecularization. It's easier.
It probably is. Molecular. No, it's not. Atomizing the world. The next one is consumer to consumer. The tenth is leveraging the new scarcity. I think that's an excellent chapter, and I think our readers, our listeners will have to read the book to learn about what the new scarcity components are in business and to build your business around it. I want to touch on this one in our talk today, the end of the advertising big idea, the shift from mass to personalized, which we all see happening, the new bell curve, which is fascinating. And I have a sense that there might be something about that in the dip, although I'm not sure. And number 14, the new gatekeepers, the bloggers and that world. I want to talk about that one. So you can see that this book, Meatball Sunday, is really rich in isolating and crystallizing the changes that are happening in the market today so that you can compare your business to it and see if you're tracking to the way you need to operate in today's new marketing movement. So let's take the first one, authenticity. Tell us about that trend.
Well, in All Marketers Are Liars, I talked about this, the fact that what people buy when they buy something is not the widget or the specs or the cycle time or the cost and performance ratio. What they're buying is the story, the way it makes them feel, the thing they can tell other people about. And stories are what sell, and marketers tell stories. Well, you're tempted, if you're running for president or building a product or selling a service, to tell different stories to different people. Because if you tell each person the story they need to hear, you'll make more sales. The problem is people talk to each other now. The mm-hmm. problem is your speech gets recorded and put on YouTube and everyone gets to see it. The problem is that you can't say you're against sweatshops and then have one in India because people will discover it. And so in a world where everyone is talking behind the scenes, you have to live your story. Your story actually has to be true. And what we find is that companies that really care about what they do and live their story have no trouble keeping their story straight because they just tell the truth all the time. And that's required now if you're going to be examined from all angles.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's looking at you in every way, and it lives on in your reputation. So let's talk about the next one, which is Google dicing or atomizing the world. It's hard to say, atomizing the world.
Well, you know, before Google, you got to control the front door. You got to decide when someone interacted with you and in what way. You could take them from A to B to C to D. Now, people start everything at Google, and they type in what they're looking for, and they might end up on F or J or N. They can jump right through to the middle of what you do. And what that means is, first of all, you don't get to control your story. Secondly, it means that you can't make money from bundling the way you used to. So the cell phone store down the street will sell you the whole kit for $200, but if you lose your power cord, they're going to charge you $29 for a new one. Well, I can go to Amazon and buy the new power cord for a penny, literally. And so all of a sudden, someone who could extract profit by holding things together discovers that Google and Amazon and the others split it into tiny atoms, and they have to play by different rules now.
So if you're going to atomize your product offering, essentially, if you're in a service business creating a Chinese menu, what happens to your profitability if you can't bundle it? How do you handle that?
Well, I mean, part of it comes from the way we think about DNA. One skin cell is enough to recreate a whole human. You have to make it so that every piece of what you do can live and die on its own and communicate a lot of your story. Number two is, you need to think about what it is you're selling people. If you are a commodity supplier, you're in trouble because commodities will be cherry-picked. People will seek you out just for the few loss leaders you have and walk away on the ones you're used to making a profit from.
Mm-hmm.
And so the alternative is to not be in the commodity business, to fundamentally change what it is you sell and how you sell it so that what people buy from you, the story, the experience, the product, is something you can happily sell them.
On a recent episode of Dishy Mix, we had Dove Seidman on the show. He wrote the book How, and his point of view is that everything is commoditized, and there's always someone who can do a better job at something than you, and that there are very few. In your case, you used IDEO as an example of a bastion of talent that's unduplicatable, but that in general, almost every business is entirely duplicatable, offshoreable, replicable, parsed and atomizable, and all of those things.
I don't believe that.
Okay, well, what he says, the only point of differentiation is your ethics and your credibility and the way that you handle people and your conduct, essentially. Your ethics and your conduct are the single most important differentiator in the market today.
Well, and that part is correct.
Okay.
But see, the mistake, and maybe you're misquoting him, is...
I could be.
You said every business is a commodity. No,
mm-hmm.
The business includes the way they treat people. The business includes its ethics and its story and its care and what it does. That is the business.
Yeah.
Every speckable product is a commodity,
mm-hmm.
right? That, you know, you go on Engadget, you can find 10 companies that are making things that look just like iPhones now.
Yeah.
Once you can spec it, it will become a commodity unless you can surround it with the other stuff, the stuff that used to be called the soft stuff. And guess what? All we pay for now is the soft stuff. That's the business you're actually in. You're in the business of the way you greet the people when they walk into your restaurant. You're in the business of what you do when things break.
Yep, you're in the business of the soft stuff. That's well put. That's a good quote. We'll use that as a pull quote. You are in the business of the soft stuff. It's so true. So you're in complete agreement with Dove. Sounds like a book you might want to read. Or hey, you could just listen to Dishy Mix episode. So I want to move to infinite channels, which is another trend that we can't afford to ignore. Tell us about that, because so many people listening to the show today are in the media space.
Well, there are a couple implications. When I grew up in Buffalo, there were three channels, 2, 4, and 7. And then in the afternoon, you could watch Ultraman on channel 29. But that was it. And so if you advertised in two of those places, you were going to get at least half the people who were watching television. Now, not only are there 500 cable TV networks, but there's more than a billion channels on the web. Every Google search is a channel. Every YouTube video is a channel. And with infinite channels, your chance of interrupting people who don't want to hear from you is zero. It means that the Super Bowl is less important. It means that all the ads you used to use to interrupt the few people who were likely to pay for what you had to sell are meaningless now in the long run, because the very people you want to reach the most are the ones who are least likely to be watching the ads. And that instead, you have to come up with a new strategy, one that embraces the long tail of media, one that isn't dependent on hits, but in fact can thrive by building a permission asset, building a following, building your own channel. You know, the fact is that my channel, the people who read my blog, is bigger than the number of people who ever read Fast Company magazine. So I own my own magazine now, and if I wanted to run ads on it, I could. Everyone can own their own magazine. Everyone can have their own TV network. And if you wait before you build yours, it'll be too late.
So one of the ways that you like to give people an option of building their own channel is through Squidoo. I think it's a good time to talk about that.
Well, Squidoo is now up to about 150,000 people who have built 375,000 pages on every topic you can imagine. We allow somebody for free to build a page on any topic that they're passionate about. They can include links and blog posts and Amazon books and YouTube videos. They can include polls and things people can link up and down and debates, etc. So if you build one of these channels, or as many of our users have 100 of them or 200 of them, you can start curating what people are finding when they do a search. So instead of someone having to stare at the Google search results and figure out which they want to click on and go back, they can go to what a human built, a human's overview of what they need, what meaning they need to understand before they click through and take action. And then we turn around and pay a royalty to charity or to the person who built the page based on the activity that those people take.
So why would someone not just build their own page on their own website? What's the incentive to do it on Squidoo?
Well, there are several. The first is there's a reason that authors want their books to be sold in the bookstore. Because even though the bookstore is filled with your competition, being next to the other books increases your sales. The proximity effect kicks in and it becomes a magnet. And what happens on Squidoo is, in addition to having millions of people coming every month, more than 7 million, looking at multiple pages, we also are admired by the search engines, which means that being on our site makes it more likely searchers are going to find you. And then the last reason is you have better things to do than to set up the 50 modules of technology that we already have, so that in just a couple of minutes and a few clicks, you can set these things up and they're just going to work.
Got it. So one of the things that I noticed is that there's no Squidoo lens for Burning Man, and there's no Squidoo lens for podcasting.
Well, go to it.
I might have to. So I'm really sad right now. I can't believe that I'm sad about this, but I really had my hopes up that I would be able to get an orange rubber squid, and I don't know why. Like, the last thing I want is some plastic piece of crap in my life, but I love your logo, and I thought you had some squid left, and when we were prepping for this interview today, you told me you're squid free.
Well, what happened was, before we argued about the name of Squidoo for months.
I can imagine.
And I typed Squidoo into Google before we went, and there was only one match. And the match was a guy who makes fishing lures in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called him up, and I said, you know, is there going to be a problem if we call this thing Squidoo? He said, no. And I said, well, what is it? And a Squidoo? A Squidoo is one of his units. It's a fishing lure that looks a little like a squid, sort of. And he said he'd make us a batch in our color, but the minimum order was like 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we only needed 20 of them, but we had to buy 2,000, and we thought we'd never use them up, but a couple trade shows later, they're all gone.
Well, I'm super sad about that. If anyone ever comes back to you, earmark it for me.
You got it.
So we're going to go to a break. I was hoping we would get through all of these. I still want to talk to you about the end of the advertising big idea and the new gatekeepers, because I think those are really interesting to the Dishy Mix listeners. Let's go to a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about that as well as about some of the other things you have going on in your world. So stay tuned. This is Susan Bratton, your host of Dishy Mix, and we're with Seth Godin, author, blogger, speaker, entrepreneur, and leader of the new marketing movement, who is squidless. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, host of Green Talk Radio. Green Talk helps you navigate the maze of green and eco products on the market today and make smarter lifestyle choices at home and at work through informative and entertaining interviews with industry authors and experts, as well as executives from innovative companies around the world. Find Green Talk Radio on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. Green Talk Radio, environmental stewardship through smart consumption. Green Talk Radio.
We're back, and Seth Godin has joined us today. His latest of 10 fantastic books is Meatball Sunday, Is Your Marketing Out of Sync? And before we went to the break, we were going through some of the 14 trends that no marketer can afford to ignore. And the last two, the first is the end of the advertising big idea. Seth, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, in the 1960s, if you went to Bill Birnbach, he'd give you the Jolly Green Giant or Charlie the Tuna. You could come up with a big idea in advertising that would pay for itself a million times over. And I'm arguing that advertising doesn't work so well anymore and big ideas aren't important. What matters are big content. What matters is the iPod or the iPhone or a video made by a kid in New Jersey singing the Numa Numa song. That the products and ideas themselves are the ones that are spreading, not the clever advertising trappings that go around them.
Mm-hmm. Right. No more are we building for the mass middle. We're building for a specific marketplace.
Well, that, but more important, the medium of the web is more likely to spread the clever idea of the thing as opposed to spread the jingle or the clever execution of the commercial.
And let's move to the new gatekeepers. Tell us about that. Why is that a trend we can't ignore?
Well, if we have infinite channels of communication, it doesn't matter if you know Rupert Murdoch. It doesn't matter if you went to Harvard with a guy who now works at the New York Times, because there's so many other channels that the gatekeepers in the old channels have way less power than they used to. But then there are new gatekeepers. There's people like Robert Scoble or the Boing Boing guys, etc. People who didn't used to be gatekeepers, and there's lots of them, who serve their readers. And the minute they stop serving their readers and start cashing out, they won't be gatekeepers anymore.
And how long do you think this trend will go on? Do you think this is just going to continue to bloom and bloom and bloom? Do you think there'll be a rising up of some of the bloggers and that they'll get usurped into mainstream media? Do you think, I see mainstream media bringing on bloggers. You know, my next Dishy Mix is with Rafe Needleman. He is a professional journalist and has been for his entire career, yet his title at CNET is Chief Blogger.
Well, you know, every single 18-year-old in America has a Facebook page. So they're all blogging already. I mean, it may not be called a blog, but they got their own page.
Yeah.
And that's just going to get extended. Mm-hmm. So, sure, we love celebrities. We like gurus. We want people to be ones we can look to and quote. And those people will be there for the foreseeable future. But as Duncan Watts' new research shows, it's not, you know, the Uber bloggers that are making as big an impact as just the masses of people, each of whom is now a journalist.
Very interesting to watch what happens. And I want to talk a little bit about where social networking will evolve. But I don't want to forget to mention the fact that if you're listening today to Seth and you want a copy of Meatball Sunday, you can actually get it for free because you're a Dishy Mix listener. The way you would do that is go to audiblepodcast.com/dishy, D-I-S-H-Y, and you can sign up. If you sign up for the Audible Listeners Club, you get a free download. You can choose it to be Meatball Sunday, and you can listen to Seth's book on essentially tape, which will be your iPod or computer now. We got to get a new name for that. Once you join that club, you're billed $14.95 a month, which is about two-thirds the price of anything that you could download on Audible, which is great. So you get a discount on your downloads going forward. And even if you cancel within 14 days, you'll still get to keep Seth's book or whatever you choose. So support my show and support yourself at the same time and make Seth happy by reading his book or listening to his book. All right, so let's move on. I want to talk about social networking. You were just talking about reputation systems a little bit. And I think that was, I'd asked you before the interview where you thought social networking would evolve. What do you see the future of that looking like?
Well, I think the most important thing for our listeners to understand is social networking is not about you. It doesn't exist to sell products, and it's a lousy place to advertise. If I had sat down to try to invent the worst medium that could be conceived of to attract the masses, but be ineffective for advertising, it would be Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
That no one goes to Facebook hoping to find a good deal on a new product, and they don't go to Facebook hoping that their friends will shill selling something so that they can earn a commission. And so it's a mistake, I believe, to look at this social networking thing as an opportunity to do business the old way. I do believe that there is a huge need among mankind and personkind to connect. That's what we love to do more than anything else. And so I think that businesses are going to have to understand that what they can do for a living is start connecting their customers to each other and to their business, and more important, to the people who work at their business.
So do you think that there's an opportunity for there to be influencers that are connected through social networking that can have some impact for you as if you have a brand, if you have a product, could you find your influencers, and in some way would there be a good way to leverage them in the social networking world?
You don't get to leverage people. People are people. They get to decide what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think if I had to give you four words, it would be like Ron Paul. You know, not necessarily be like Ron Paul and his views on this, that, or the other thing, but be like Ron Paul in the fact that he's a leader who is going somewhere whether or not people follow him. And that approach has attracted a large number of people who talk about him because they want to, not because they're getting paid to, not because it's their job to. And that idea is critical because That's the only way you're going to be authentic. It's the only way you can be transparent.
That's what I was going to go. I was saying this goes right back to authenticity and the power of your story, the power of your beliefs, the power of what you stand for, and that people will galvanize around that naturally. And you're right. Leveraging was a terrible word. Thank you. Keeping me on the straight and narrow. Seth Godin.
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to people who are listening.
Absolutely. No, I love it. So I wanted to segue into another thing that I asked you, which was the book you most recommend to your friends. You recommend The Art of Possibility by Ben Zander. It's about transforming professional and personal life. Tell us about that book, too, because I love transformational content, as you know.
Well, I don't, you know, there are a few books that have changed my life, but that's way up there.
Mm-hmm.
Ben and his wife wrote a book all about how he teaches and how she trains people to overcome the things that are holding them back. And it's a little bit about fear, but mostly it's about not wasting the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And there are riffs in it that stick in my head, you know, for months. And then when they go away, I read the book again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds good. I'm ordering that one. That'll be the next book I buy. It sounds fascinating. So we only have a few minutes left. And I just really wanted to have an opportunity to understand where you are in your world and your thinking. You've produced 10 great books. You're the most popular marketing blog in the industry. You're a well-known and sought-after public speaker. Are you happy? Is this what's working for you? Do you love it? Or are you formulating the next version of Seth 3.0?
Well, that one's pretty easy to answer. Every single day I've been privileged enough to do this, I've been happy doing it every single day. And I'm in no hurry to have that end, but the minute I tried to put it in a bottle and keep it the way it is, it would go away. So what I try to do is keep challenging my status quo and the status quo, doing things that the people around me say aren't particularly bright, like the Seth Godin action figure. And
I like,
you know,
that.
The journey is really the fun part for me. And I have no doubt that I've had blog posts that are clinkers and books that people didn't like, and that I will do something that doesn't maximize, if that's something that people want to achieve, which I don't, my income or guruhood, such as it is, or whatever. But that's not the point. The point is that everybody who's lucky enough to be on this planet right now, but particularly in a position where you can spend your day listening to a phone call or making cool stuff on the internet, has great potential. And I think it's a mistake to waste it just doing the same thing you did yesterday.
So one of the things that you told me in getting ready for the interview was that it's the best thing about living right here and right now is that we have more choices, more wealth, more knowledge than any other generation ever before. But we need to take advantage of it, not squander it. What advice would you give us for not squandering it? How do you take advantage of everything that's available?
Well, I don't know if I take advantage of everything that's available, but just Wikipedia alone. If you had Wikipedia in the year 1910, you'd be the smartest, richest person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I think teaching other people, whether they're kids or adults, about the resources that are out there and pushing them to figure out how to put those resources to use will help you figure out what you're missing, because it's the practice of the process of seeing what ruts you're in and getting out of those ruts and going in different directions that opens doors for people.
So I'm going to end the show with this final question for you. I'd promised our readers that I'd talk to you about what makes you a successful presenter, and I'd really like some solid, actionable tips. But I'd also like you to tell the story of that moment that crystallized for you when you really learned how to get up and motivate people.
Astonishingly simple how to be a great presenter. It's just really hard, which is presentation is nothing but the transfer of emotion. If all you're trying to do is transfer content, you should send an email or maybe a PDF file. The reason that you're speaking to people in public is because you want to communicate the humanness of your message. And if you're not prepared to do that, either because you don't believe in what you're saying or because you're too afraid, then I'm begging you not to do it. Don't even get up. People would prefer it if you would just send them the memo. But if you are passionate about what you are trying to communicate, then show the passion, not the bullet points. I don't need your bullet points. You can just hand them to me. And the best speeches, the speeches that people remember, are never the speeches the CFO gave with a bunch of PowerPoints.
And so what was that one moment for you when you learned that?
I was really lucky that I spent my youth in Canada in a national park, And the summer camp that I helped run had 200 people and 66 wooden cedar strip canoes and a bunch of sailboats and some other things. More canoes than almost any place on Earth, actually. And I was the canoeing instructor. And the problem with canoeing is that it's a 17-foot-long vehicle, and you put an 11-year-old kid in it by themselves, it's a little tricky. Plus, it's not as fun as sailing. So my job was to stand up in front of large groups of people who were afraid or tired and persuade them through nothing but the force of my emotion and the sound of my voice to get into a 17-foot-long vehicle, bigger than any bicycle they'd ever ridden, and master it. And doing that day after day, year after year, I discovered in real time what worked and what didn't. And pretty much ever since then, every time I go to talk to people, I'm imagining not that I want their money or their attention. I just want them to overcome the natural anxiety they have of getting in something that feels a little too big and help them find the confidence to master something that I know they can do.
Well, and whether it's a canoe or anything else that you have to tackle, it's all about the same thing, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not short on information. We're not short on facts. I think we might be a little short on confidence.
Oh, well, it's a human condition, right?
There you go.
Well, it's been really a pleasure to have you on the show today. I liked all of your terse and pithy responses to all the questions I peppered you with. Thank you so much for that.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Thank you so much.
Good. All right. Well, you've been listening to Seth Godin, who is a blogger, author, speaker, entrepreneur. Check out Squidoo. Get his book, Meatball Sunday. I guarantee you'll enjoy the whole read. I sure did. And if you want to call me, you can call me about anything dishy at 206-350-5333. My blog is dishymix.com, and you can find my show in iTunes and on personallifemedia.com. I hope you have a great day, and thanks so much for tuning in to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I'll see you next week.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.